are off and running. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. John is my buddy and my engineer producer on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you. It is Tuesday. It's August the 6th, 2024. We'll begin our 15th year already in January coming up. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, part of the growing presence of Bustos Media here in town. Five radio stations now under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI The Voice. Got our worldwide live listening and pretty much every show we've ever done. Very conveniently podcast available. Podcast ready. How's that? At buckmastershow.com for our telephone interviews. And we have a telephone interview plan to get things going. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On the live line is Dr. Dave Wells. Dr. Wells is the research director of the Grand Canyon Institute based in Phoenix. It's a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to informing and improving public policy in Arizona through evidence-based, independent, objective, nonpartisan research. GCI makes a good faith effort to ensure that the findings are reliable, accurate, and based on reputable sources. So let's welcome now Dr. Wells. Dr. Wells, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well today.
Well, I see that the formal executive summary is now out for the fiscal year 2023 on what was the first year that Arizona's Empowerment Scholarship account, known as ESA, the voucher program, was expanded from the original targeted populations, primarily special needs students, to universal eligibility? What do we know about that first year, Dr. Wells?
Well, we know that we estimate about $450 million was allocated in accounts, but only about $304 million was actually spent, which means that we have, at one level, we have rollover accounts, and which at the end of fiscal year 23 had reached about $175 million. That's something that Dylan Rosenblatt from Estate 48 was able to get, but it took about a year to get the data, and he shared it with us. And then we've also identified, beyond that, where some of the money went. About $173 million of the $304 million went to different private school entities. Some of those are special ed, but a lot of them are religious. And of the religious ones, they're primarily evangelical Christian as well as Catholic schools.
How about the expenses, Dr. Wells, on items not clearly tied to the educational curriculum, as has been noted by Chris Mays, who is our guest Friday here on our show?
Yeah, I'm really glad that she's identified that. So these are things like you may not have known that you could buy Lego sets for $1,500. I didn't know you could do that. And you've got, people who are, paying for, pianos and trampolines and expensive ballet shoes and musical instruments. There were 14,000 vendors who received money from the ESA program in fiscal year 23. And a certain amount of it, some of that was outside of our data collection, so we weren't able to fully examine it, but ABC 15 up in Phoenix had looked at it, and they've identified those things. In our report, Dylan Rosenblatt also got a detailed list of a number of the Lego expenditures in particular, and he's got a spreadsheet with all of those things going on there. It's something that we think that there should be much clearer educational plans and then follow through about how things fit with that, because in my book, a $1,500 Lego set doesn't fit with an educational plan.
And we also should point out that the expansion included the homeschoolers and in-home micro schools. What are in-home micro schools? They became eligible for ESA vouchers.
Yeah, so Prenda is the largest one, which is a non-religious one, but some of them are also religious-based micro schools. So essentially, they provide some kind of curriculum, usually for a small group of kids who might show up at somebody's home, which might be a particular parent's home, but it might also be somebody else who is not exactly a teacher. I mean, that person usually, like in the context of Prenda, they get paid a modest amount, but they're primarily supposed to help guide the children through the curriculum. That's essentially how micro schools work. But again, with the ESA program, there's no oversight. So there's no required testing and nothing to know, what students are necessarily learning. We noted when we went through all of the different Christian evangelical private schools that, there are particular curriculums that they use that are essentially Bible-based ones that we were able to see, including ones from ABECA, the Academy for Christian Excellence, and also Bob Jones University, which was an interesting one to see accelerated Christian education, because Bob Jones University is known in the 1970s for losing their IRS religious exemption because they refused to desegregate.
So when you look at the history of the ESA vouchers, Arizona has been really one of the leaders in coming on board with this, correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's why there's a – I was actually talking with somebody from the BBC earlier today who's doing a segment on Arizona's ESA program. Because Arizona was the first state to adopt universal vouchers, and a lot of people are taking a look to see, what that meant.
One of the things that really – I know one of our contributors to this program is former Arizona School Superintendent of the Year. He's very well known here in Southern Arizona, Dr. Robert Hendricks, who was at Flowing Wells for the school district here for many years. And one thing that he always points out when we talk about this, and it bugs him and it bugs a lot of people, is that Arizona has minimal to no transparency and accountability with the ESA program.
Yeah, that was a key part of our report, because if we're going to have a program like this, there needs to be we went back actually to the person who originally advocated for this. This is the economist Milton Friedman. And, going back, taking a look at it, and Friedman believed in accountability. Just to quote the pro-voucher Manhattan Institute scholar Nicole Stell Garnett, who is a law professor at Notre Dame and clerk for Clarence Thomas, said Friedman's case for parental choice was at its core about accountability. It says many private schools and those people who advocate for parental choice on their behalf mistakenly oppose even minimal accountability requirements. So I think that's something that needs to definitely change. We put in a number of recommendations in our report for improving accountability, and some of it's mirrored after charter schools. So, like all vendors receiving at least $200,000 or more in ESA funds need to get an independent audit that can be publicly found, and that all private schools have to provide annual financial reports to the Department of Education. And those are just a couple of the multiple things that we did, because there just really needs to be stepped up oversight of this kind of a program to make sure kids are actually being well served.
And if folks are wondering, well, why is this a big deal? Well, it goes back to Arizona's, let's face it, what you're talking about, the ESA, has been, Dr. Wells, a significant contributor to these budget shortfalls, correct?
Yeah, and one of the things that we pointed out was, like, for instance, there's $175 million and probably more than that sitting in ESA accounts not spent. And just to balance the budget this year, lawmakers took $115 million from the opioid settlement dollars to balance the budget and put it to the Department of Corrections. And that's simply it might get through the courts, but it's simply a bad idea that you should be taking money that should be used to provide prevention or rehabilitation for folks, and instead using it to balance the budget. So, this is a serious issue in the budgetary scheme of things in Arizona, and it's inherently problematic for that reason.
All right, where can people find out more? Tell us a little bit more about where they can find out more information, Dr. Wells.
Sure. So if they go to our website, which is GrandCanyonInstitute.org, they can pull up the most recent report we put out on Thursday, and they also can pull up, you know, our prior report, which we put out in June, which is where we estimated just the cost of the universal voucher program for fiscal year 24 and what it's projected to look like in fiscal year 25. And but they can also, again, see all the recommendations we have in terms of financial oversight and how the program, if it's going to stay in place, should be, could be improved.
All right, and we appreciate that. When you were on in June, you actually gave us kind of the exclusive on that, about that, some of the costs, and we appreciate your relationship to our show. Thank you, Dr. Dave Wells.
I'm glad to join you.
Thanks. All right. We will take a break right here. Shelley Fishman is coming up next, and it is good to see Shelley put a thumbs up for the markets after, pretty dismal couple of days. Well, a day anyway. Well, Friday was bad too, so a couple of days. Be right back with Shelley. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for Marketplace Trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Shelley Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelley via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. I was, after what happened yesterday, I was kind of thinking, oh gosh, Tuesday must.
I was going to call in sick.
Yeah. Whoa. And it didn't just start yesterday.
It started Friday after the jobs report came out. What was going on, Bill, and this has been something that we've talked about now for weeks and weeks and weeks, is that the economy is slowing down somewhat.
Yes.
We had actually, you know, as I say that, I'm going to call myself a liar. We had a 1.6% GDP growth in the first quarter and like 2.6% in the second quarter. But it's slowing down from the fourth quarter of last year. What's happening is higher interest rates are having an effect, the desired effect, if you're a, you know, a Fed guy, the desired effect of slowing down the economy in order to reduce inflation. What we saw, however, in this report, which was expected to be about 180,000 jobs created and turned out only to be about 114,000, was that we weren't seeing any layoffs or no significant layoffs. What we were seeing is a real slowdown in new hires.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we were seeing people who had been out of the workforce coming back into the workforce. So the unemployment rate ticked up 0.1%. Okay, that wouldn't be a problem, except it's like the fourth month in a row or something that we've had 0.1% increase.
And that's starting to look like a trend.
It's starting to look like a trend. And there's also, again, a 20th century rule that says if you have three increases in unemployment in three consecutive months, then the chances of a recession are much enhanced.
Mm.
So, you know, we started getting the usual stuff about, is the soft landing going to go away? We're going to get a hard landing, blah, blah, blah. But what was really going on is that corporations were not forecasting the kind of hiring that earlier in the year they had said was going to typify their behavior. At the same time, because of high interest rates and the high cost of capital caused by the higher interest rates, corporations that had been planning to do significant capital spending for the balance of the year and into next year were cutting back and announcing cutbacks in those plans. Now, and this is going to get a little into the weeds, but I think I can make it clear. We have talked about price-to-earnings ratios and how important it is to keep your eye on what the P-to-E ratios are. If you take a look at the P-to-E ratios going back for a year, and the reason you have to go back is because the P is the price. That's at any given date you want to calculate it.
Mm-hmm.
But the earnings is always the annual earnings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have to go back a year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go back a year, you take a look at the P to E earnings, they're right about where the averages have been for, you know, on balance for several decades. But if you go forward for a year and you take a look at the price to earnings ratios based upon the forward earnings, then they were well inflated. The prices that we're seeing for the stocks were based upon a series of forecasted earnings that were dependent upon all of that capital investment. And what happened on Friday was we got the clear feeling that that capital investment wasn't going to happen, or at least wasn't going to happen at the levels that had been forecasted into the market. As a result, you started getting the big institutional investment houses pulling back their bets for the future, essentially. You know, when what these big houses do is they buy options in an advancing market. They buy options. And so what they were doing was retiring those options, bringing the market down. So you had Japan got scared because everything in the world happens in dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
their market fell 12%.
Yes, yeah, that was a real crash.
12%, yeah.
And it had nothing, it had only something to do with our markets.
Mm-hmm.
Then Europe got scared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, of course, now, as you know, you take a look at the time differences, and then the U.S. markets.
Mm-hmm. Japan, by the way, recovered pretty much everything.
Everything,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
and we were starting to recover.
We were doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Did I say pretty good? We were doing pretty well.
Yeah.
The beginning part of the day, but we're off the daily highs. But what's happening is that the automated programs that the big investors use to hedge their bets have now all kicked in. And what we're seeing is the everyday investors are beginning to, yesterday were beginning to panic. Today are kind of reversing themselves a bit. I'm not worried about this.
Some say it's actually a healthy sign.
Well, it is a healthy sign. It's a correction. I mean, we're still up, even with where we opened the day, we were still up for the year. So I mean, this is not a disaster. What it is, however, is a really strong warning, I think, that says this economy, as resilient as it's been, as impossible it has been to use, the 20th century measurements to measure this 21st century economy, nevertheless, there are some laws of physics. And when companies start reducing their investments going forward and stop hiring and training in order to meet the needs of those investments, then you have a real slowdown in the economy. We've seen it for months now in the housing market, and now we're seeing it as major companies are beginning to pull back and talk about pulling back, and that's really dangerous.
Could this have been headed off if Powell and the gang had gone ahead and done a 0.25% drop
or a
half percent drop a couple of weeks ago?
How many ways can I say yes?
Oh boy.
Okay. We've got to fix this. We've also got to make sure that inflation doesn't come back. This inflation was mostly because of the pandemic. Let me give you my five rules for how to fix this in 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. The number one rule is the Fed's got to cut rates now, and they can't be too conservative about it. There was some talk in the press about the Fed meeting
in a special session. I didn't even know they could do that.
Yeah, they can do it, or they get the Fed presidents together and they vote. So I think that we need to get a real signal that they're going to start cutting interest rates, and not by a quarter of a point between now and the end of the year.
Mm-mm.
The next thing we absolutely need to do is to remove the Trump tariffs that were imposed in the first and second year of the Trump administration that Biden held on to. Don't ask me why.
Mm.
Now, I understand why those tariffs in the future might be necessary, especially as we're trying to encourage the onshore movement of the manufacturing of the things we put tariffs on. Mm-hmm. The problem is, it's not there.
Why didn't Biden remove them immediately?
I called him and he said, I can't take your call now.
All right, so those are your first two. Cut interest rates.
Those are the first two things. And take the tariffs off.
Yeah.
Okay, we also have to take a look at where the corporate greed has stepped up far more than the expense corporate costs would justify price increases. There's a bunch of that. I don't think it's a major contributor to inflation, but there's a bunch of that. And we have regulatory agencies, unless, of course, the Supreme Court steps in and stops it, that say, we got to tell those corporations they got to quit doing that. Those three things would have an immediate effect on growth, which would be significantly impacted in the positive direction, and prices, which would be significantly impacted in a negative direction.
You got two more, right?
I do. And these are longer term issues. One is reforming the income tax rules to restore revenues to sustainable levels, so that we're reversing the upward movement of wealth. You know, for the past 20, 30, 40 years, we've had good GDP growth, and none of it has gone to the middle class.
No.
We got to do that. We got to fix that. And the only way to, well, I shouldn't say the only way. One way is to cut spending, but nobody's going to do that. The best way to fix that is to bring revenues more in line with our expenses. And the fifth thing, and this is really kind of part of four, but we have moved the inheritance tax rules to the point that almost nobody pays any inheritance taxes anymore. Plus, we still have a rule in there that says when I leave stocks to my beneficiaries when I die, the price of that stock automatically is stepped up to what it is on the date of my death, so that even though I haven't paid any taxes on the capital gains, my heirs don't have to pay any taxes on the capital gains either. That's a chunk of money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Biden has been talking about that. He says he's not going to raise taxes for people making less than $400,000, but for people making more than $400,000, he wants to get that under control. I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. We need to raise corporate taxes back to where they were, about 30-35% from this 21%, which is silly. There are so many things we can do in the long term to make sure we fix these problems, and in the short term to fix them as well.
So the markets did a quick check here. They're up 560-some points, but they're
right.
Down a little bit from the days, I think.
Yeah, we were up
seven,
at 700 and a change.
Something.
Anyway. That's okay. So long as it sticks, we'll see what happens over the next 2 weeks. My guess is that when we get to the end of the year and we measure this year, it's going to be an average year, which means it's going to be around a 12% year.
All right, Shelley, great to see you. Thanks for helping.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. They are welcoming you with open arms. And the thing I love about Green Things, one of the many things, their staff over there, the knowledgeable people, if you walk in and say, I'd really like some drought-tolerant plants, they won't just say, oh, walk over there. They will take you over and guide you to the place where you can purchase what you need. I love that. The sales staff that Jan and Jack have put together over there is terrific. Their website is greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business, we love to mention them as well because really important part of the business, zocalovillage.com. If you need any kind of pottery or some beautiful dining room sets that are handcrafted out of mesquite wood or other lovely woods, they've got that for you at Zocalo Village. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. One of the things that we are so proud of here on the Buckmaster Show is the staff. These are contributors to our program, people who come in, or if they have to, they'll use the live line. But there's two dozen people that we've assembled, and we've got all of their pictures and bios up at buckmastershow.com. One of them is Jeff Silvertooth. He's our contributor on agriculture. Jeff is a professor, an extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. He served on the UA faculty and worked statewide since 1987. Professor Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Very good, Bill. Thank you. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I was at breakfast the other day and overheard a couple talking about the water crisis in Arizona, and they were saying that, gee, everything would be fine if agriculture industry just didn't use all the water that they use. And they were talking about, why can't we just use the native plants that grow here? It is an issue, Jeff. People wonder about how much water ag uses in Arizona.
And that's good they do. It's good they do ask that question. And the answer to the question is Arizona agriculture uses over 70%, or about 70% of our state's water, of the total water in the state. And there's a good reason why, because it takes water to produce, to boost crops. Mm-hmm. And so you're just talking about going to Zocalo Village and buying mm-hmm. plants.
Yeah.
And any plant takes water to grow. And the more
To live.
You know, if you've had a house plant or a garden, you don't have to be a farmer to see
this. No, it's going to dry up without water, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
But the fact also, too, is if you... The more water, the more plant you want to produce, the more water it takes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the same thing as you'd have in your garden or at home. You want a drought-tolerant plant that's not going to grow much. It's going to grow very slowly.
Yes.
Very slowly, but it's going to be able to conserve that water. In agriculture, we have to produce a crop from the seed to the table to harvest mm-hmm. within one season. Mm-hmm. And one season might be like here at summertime, so crops we're growing right now were probably planted in the spring, like March and April. Mm-hmm. We'll harvest them in the fall, October, November, usually September, October, November. It takes water to support those crops, particularly in a warm environment. But the thing is, too, if that's the truth that exists with plant production and animal production anywhere. In Arizona, in the desert, we use this water, but we use it very productively. We have more production per acre than anywhere else in the world. And the reason being is that anywhere else in the world, like where I come from, out in the Great Plains, big agricultural area, it's all dependent or largely dependent on rainfall. And the yields are the first limiting factor in yields or in production of plants is water. Always. That's another just fact of nature. It's not something we've invented or we've generated. It's a basic fact. So we're going to grow these crops, these plants out here in the desert. It takes quite a bit of water to do so. We do get benefit from that. And a good thing, I think, right now, too, in this line of conversation is to ask people, do you know how much water it takes to produce crops in Arizona? And that answer mm-hmm. would be, yes, it takes 70%. And that would lend to the argument that you overheard the other day.
Well, yeah, that people saying we'd have 70% more water if we just got rid of all of the agricultural needs.
True. Yeah. But are you going to get rid of all your food as well? You know, so we ought to ask people the same question. Yeah. If you know that, then do you know how much water it takes to produce the food you eat every day?
Yeah.
And most people don't. Matter of fact, surveys have been conducted, legitimate surveys, and we can talk about that information. Those mm-hmm. are the facts.
I want to hear that information.
It's interesting because if you actually look at what we use and you calculate it out in terms of the water requirements to produce the food that you and I and right. just the average Americans are consuming every day, let's say Arizonans, mm-hmm. it comes out to be anywhere from 800 to 1,500 gallons a day on the average. And it can go up to 2,000, 2,500 gallons a day easily, mm-hmm. depending on your person's diet.
Mm-hmm.
The more the meat we eat, the higher the water requirement will be because animals take a lot of water to produce that product.
Mm-hmm.
But the average consumer of these surveys show that you ask them, how much water do you think it takes a day to support your food needs? They'll think mm-hmm. maybe 30 gallons, maybe 100, mm-hmm. you know, somewhere along those lines. So there's a huge disparity between perceptions and facts. But as you and I both know, facts may be facts, but perceptions become reality. And that's what mm-hmm. we're dealing with here. And that's largely, I think, the basis of these arguments. It's like what you overheard. But
and then I had someone just chime in the conversation, which is wonderful. People can always send me something at Facebook. And an individual who lives out in Marana doesn't like the cotton growing out there, saying it's a huge water issue, water user, and all of it or most of it goes to China. What would you say to that listener?
Absolutely. It's an international market. What we're dealing with commodities like cotton, corn, wheat, a lot of other major commodities, is they go into an international market. There's a huge demand right now in China for all these products. You know, we could also say, too, that we're people like myself and probably you and maybe other people here in the States mm-hmm. this summertime, most of the clothing I'm wearing right now today is composed of cotton.
Yeah, me too.
And so that cotton, we just basically contribute our cotton production into the world market. Mm-hmm. And the largest consumer today in the world market for basically everything mm-hmm. is China, with over a billion population of more mm-hmm. than a billion people. Mm-hmm. They consume quite a lot.
And getting back to this couple talking about why don't we, if we are going to do farming, it should be native plants that grow here.
Well, you know, here's a very good point. I mean, it's a good point to consider.
Yeah.
And if you want to eat native plants that are growing here, we're talking about plants that are in the desert.
Yes.
They're growing on very little water. They uh-huh. produce very little.
Uh-huh.
And they're pretty tough products to consume. But
yeah.
a lot different than what you and I'd walk into the grocery store, Food City or Albertsons or Safeway and view in the produce section. And the fact of the matter is, too, Bill, if we look at it, we have about 7.5 million people in this state. If you look at all the water we use for agriculture, we're still at a deficit of over 3 million acre feet a year just to produce the food to support the population. And a question would be asked then, where does that food make that difference come from? Well, it comes in from other states.
Mm-hmm.
We put our markets out that go elsewhere. We also consume products that are produced elsewhere that we bring into our state.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of all of this, you say, well, Arizona's not like taking care of everybody else. Actually, everybody else is taking care of us in relation to that deficit. If we went to the production, say the consumption of crops that are desert-produced native plants, you could not support a population of 7.5 million people. I haven't worked out the calculus on it, but I would doubt you could support 7,000 people very well on the plants that we just grow here in the desert just by natural native rainfall. It's just mm-hmm. not feasible. It's not practical.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad we're talking about this because what I overheard is these aren't lone opinions out there. People are really questioning agriculture right now.
Absolutely.
Your industry is under fire.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It shows two things. It shows two things that I think are very important. As one is, and I put this on my shoulders and people like myself, to say this is a it's important to inform people of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
We can't make good decisions about anything if we don't have good information on the facts. And right now, one of the concerns I think we all should have is, do we really understand how much water it takes to support each of us every day as individual Americans, human beings, Arizonans, right here in mm-hmm. Tucson and mm-hmm. elsewhere in the state? Secondly, if it comes down to say, how do we communicate this, our ideas, to the people that are making policy? Those are politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes what we find in reality is politicians are not fully informed about the facts, and they're being influenced by voters who are not fully informed. So this, like a double level of ignorance, lack of a better term, that we all can suffer from in terms of whether these products, where does the wherewithal, that was the water come from? How much water does it take just to support my life and my family every day? Mm-hmm. Like I say, just for the food alone, it takes the average American right now, average Arizonan, 800 to 1,500 gallons a day. There's food water footprints that you can use to water footprint calculators to say, well, how much am I consuming?
That just is amazing to me, that much.
It is amazing. Just, that's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would never have dreamed that number.
Exactly. Most people wouldn't.
Yeah.
And that's really the point. And that's, so I would say the first thing there is education. The second thing there is for us to get the facts and make good decisions because, you know, as the old saying goes, facts may be facts, but perceptions become people's reality. And that's what we're largely dealing with, are perceptions that are not based on fact. And that comes back, I think, of course, I have a bias. I believe it's education. I'd hate to see us come to that, like, the realization by facing drastic situations where, what if we cut the agriculture, cut the water out of places like in the Southwest, some of the highest production in the world per unit area, per acre. We would bear the consequences of that, and the state would suffer from that, and the people would suffer, and we're going to be dependent on everybody else to produce our food and have to import it in. I'd hate to see us get to a point where, like, oh, gosh, wish we hadn't done that. We wish we would have figured this out beforehand. So if the state decides to do that, I'd like to be based on fact and understanding of the reality of what we're dealing with.
All right, Jeff, we're actually a little past the commercial break. I did have the Attorney General, Chris Mays, as my guest on our show Friday, and she was saying the Saudi group that has been owns some land, I guess, right up in Western Arizona continues to expand their operation. And she also pointed out there was a Minnesota-based company that's buying up a lot of private wells in Cochise County.
Yes, sir.
Have you heard about this as well?
Absolutely,
certainly. Can we pick up on that after the break?
Absolutely,
okay,
certainly.
We will be right back with Jeff Silvertooth.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and I always tell our guests, please turn off your cell phone. And of course, I didn't turn off mine, so folks may have heard someone was calling me just now. But anyway, I want to talk about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. What a great getaway this would be. Perfect time of year. All the rains have greened up the Gila National Wilderness. It's not a bad drive at all, about 3 hours. You hit I-10, hit Lordsburg, take a left up to the mountain, 5,000 to 7,000 feet. It will be cooler over in Silver City. You can start your planning. I hope you do. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. And we usually it's about 10 to 15 degrees cooler over there. All right, with me in studio, Jeff Silvertooth, the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science, University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. And before the break, I mentioned that we were talking with Attorney General Chris Mays. She was our Friday Focus interview, and it was really the last question I brought up with her. We were actually out of time, but this is a subject she's really into, the whole water thing, Professor Silvertooth. And she said she was really dismayed that Saudi group is still going strong up in northwestern Arizona. Could you quickly give us the overview on that one?
Right. That's what they refer to, as you might see in the papers and some other media sources, the Fundamonte company is farming up there.
Okay.
And they have a large farming operation. They're doing a good job. I know the land that they're farming on, and some of the people that had that before don't believe they might own a little bit of land, but most of what we're dealing with here is on state leases.
Mm-hmm.
And they've picked up these state leases totally legally. So yeah, there's no kind of, you know, manipulation.
No funny business.
They're straight up. Matter of fact, there's a lot of land that's been under production in the state, both with regard to cattle, you know, range production, as well as crop production.
Mm-hmm.
That's state land, state lease land. The state gets that revenue, and they use it for, I believe a lot of it goes into school systems and part of the school system, public school support funding. But mm-hmm. I should stop right there.
Okay.
But anyway, that's how that works. So they're not doing anything illegal. The other thing is, too, there are some other outside concerns that can come into this state and rent land, lease land, buy land. You know, even if it's domestic companies can come in and do that. You know, this is the way it works all across the country. And so, you know, Arizona is not unique in this sense. The other thing, too, is as we mentioned with an earlier point of discussion, the cotton production or commodity crops in the state that are produced, these folks up here in Fundamonte, they produce a lot of alfalfa. So that's been a concern of people. So we don't even eat alfalfa.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the
animals eat it.
Animals eat it. It's a prime food. It's a high-quality mm-hmm. product that we produce in Arizona, again, mm-hmm. because of our climate and water capacity.
What do they do? Ship it to the coast? Then it's taken by by ship to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I don't know in their specific case, but any alfalfa crop like that that's taken out of the United States commonly goes out through Long Beach and shipped around the world.
And she brought up a point that Jim Nintzel was with me from TucsonSentinel.com, and both of us were very surprised to hear this about Cochise County. There is a Minnesota-based company that is buying up a lot of wells in that area.
Right.
What is going on?
That's the Riverside Dairies.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah, it's a large dairy operation based in Minnesota. They work in a lot of states. And what they have out here, primarily, as I understand it, they have their replacement cattle herd out here. They have the young heifers that are born. They develop them here, raise them, and then ship them into their other dairies where they go into milk production. But those, to raise those cattle, you know, they need high quality feed. And they're growing, they're buying land, they're buying wells, they're accessing, you have to have water to do that. Mm-hmm. And they can, one of the reasons they're here is because we have the capacity in Arizona to produce very high-quality alfalfa, corn feed, silage feed. And so, yeah, Riverside Farms is coming in with quite a bit of capital, you know, financial capacities, mm-hmm. buying up this land, setting up wells. They're doing that, yes, that's true, they are. But again, they're not doing anything illegal. And what we find is all these cases just basically mean Arizona law right now is basically kind of a wide open, Wild West kind of situation.
And there was talk that this legislative session would address these issues, and they completely blew it off.
A lot of talk. They didn't really blow it off, but they missed. They didn't.
A lot
hit,
of talk.
They didn't hit the pin. And so there was a lot of negotiation. Two bills were proposed, and there's a lot of negotiation back and forth. In my view, there's been quite a bit of gaslighting going on, and you know, about whose fault it is and all
that. We are
that.
So good in Arizona, our legislature, at kicking the can down the road on some right. of these really important subjects.
It's true.
Just my opinion, but
right.
go ahead.
Seems to be the
yeah.
case. But in this case, okay. it's on the board. The governor okay. wants to get this done. Mm-hmm. The legislature recognizes the need to get this done. So hopefully some progress has been made with regard to negotiations behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. They were making progress, is my understanding. I know some people are directly involved in the negotiations with the Governor's Water Council and people with regard to Farm Bureau and some other entities in the state. So hopefully they can come together for the next session and get something done. But we're coming back to the
yes.
to the case with Riverside
yes.
Dairies or
yes.
Fundamonte.
Riverside out of Minneapolis.
Yeah, they're not doing anything illegal. And if Arizonans want this to be want something different from this, then the legislators need to hear from them, and they mm-hmm. need to do something to change the water laws. Basically, in 1980, Bill, there was a Groundwater Management Act that was passed. I should say, too, what we're talking about in both these cases is groundwater depletion in the aquifers where these farming operations are taking place.
Which worries a lot of people because...
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Okay. And rightfully so. It worries all of us in agriculture.
Yeah.
I say that folks that are probably most aggressive about wanting to get something done on this are folks in agriculture. Mm-hmm. They realize if you don't, it's just a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't afford that. Nobody wants that. And so we realize we have to put some regulations on. The question is how and what and when and who manages these things. That's what needs to go into the law. But to complement that, in 1980, we need to recognize there was a Groundwater Management Act passed. It was remarkable legislation in the state to mm-hmm. get that done, but it primarily put governance over the groundwater management in the urban areas from Tucson, say Pima County, Pinal County, Maricopa County, principally. That mm-hmm. was the belt. Mm-hmm. And those were called active management areas, and they put some restrictions on groundwater management use. That's why the CAP, the Central Arizona Project, Colorado River water into the state was so important, because it took our dependence off groundwater away and gave us the more dependence on the Colorado River.
But rural Arizona?
Rural Arizona is wide open. It's really less like 19th century water law. It's you and I own land. You can put a well down. Ain't anybody going to stop you if you can afford to do it. And basically, we punch too many holes in the cup. We suck it dry faster.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's basically a simple analogy, yeah. but that's what it boils down to. So we need two things. We need to have a better understanding of the hydrology and what these aquifers are. And they're not uniform. They're very non-heterogeneous, we would say. And you need to have an understanding of the quantification of that water. We need to measure. There's a big argument in the state about do we measure or do we not even measure the water we're extracting. In my view, of course, again, I have a bias as a scientist. You can't manage anything if you're not measuring it. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to put, I think, this is just Jeff Silvertooth saying this, and based on my science orientation, we have to be able to measure. So we need to do both those things. How much water's in the tank? How much are we taking out? And then the third thing is we need to come down to some line of reasonable management. What do we do to sustain these resources, and how do we manage into the future? Mm-hmm. That takes legislation, and that means that we have to have informed policymakers in Phoenix to do that. It goes back to my original thoughts on facts. We need to do things that are fact-based with regard to our decisions.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth, always a pleasure. Out of time. Thank you, Jeff.
Well, thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right. On behalf of the professor and John, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.